Schwartz wondered if they could have made any more damn noise coming through the front door. The squeaking of the hinges and the creaking of floorboards under their weight could just as well have been a herd of stampeding elephants. As far as he was concerned, they had already announced themselves to the enemy, so there was little point in continuing with a soft probe, except that they wouldn't have heard the barely perceptible shuffle of feet above their heads. There were no voices, no indication of desperate activities, just the faintest hint of noise. Humans trying to be quiet. Schwartz had point, so he moved to the right of the interior that was lit solely by the streetlights. He pointed to his eyes and then upward at the ceiling. His teammates nodded in acknowledgement, and then Schwartz waved them into positions against the walls that would provide adequate fields of fire. Once they had the room covered, they waited patiently, each wondering what they could expect above them. Schwartz crossed the room quietly, no longer concerned about where he stepped. He managed to get across the room and edge closer to a door that was just ajar, visible only because of the sliver of light now visibly spilling from it. Whoever awaited them was probably beyond that door, which Schwartz assumed led to the upper level since there seemed no other visible means of getting there. He steeled himself, reaffirmed his grip on the pistol, and then started to move toward the door. He was about to reach forward and open it when the night outside came alive with flashing red and blue strobes, spotlights in the windows, and the sounds of car doors slamming. A moment later, the heavy pounding of boots slapping the pavement and clatter of weaponry echoed through the vast lower floor of the empty store, and the door they had just left slightly open was kicked inward with such force that Lyons had to jump aside to keep from having it embedded in his shoulder. The room was suddenly filled with SWAT officers, their bodies covered in black fatigues, body armor, and load-bearing equipment, their weapons held high and at the ready.
Put them down!
Police officers, drop your weapons! You're under arrest!
The members of Able Team slowly lowered their pistols as they exchanged furious looks with one another. Lyons opened his mouth to chew them out, but Schwartz quieted him abruptly. The room got silent, and there was the faintest sound of something bouncing around inside the wall on the other side of the door.
Grenade!
Lyons threw his entire body weight into the two closest officers and used the impetus to force them toward the door. Blun Canales went the only place he could, flat on the filthy floor. Schwartz dived for a heavy oak table. The floorboard shook with the power of the blast, and flame exploded into a funnel shape around the oak table. The scene outside went from what seemed like a fairly controlled situation to complete and utter disaster. First, there was the sound of breaking glass, followed by a loud popping sound. A rear door on one of the police cruisers crumpled, and both the front and rear door windows on the driver's side shattered. Paint bubbled on the door, and superheated shards of metal flew through the interior, scarring the plastic seats and spiderwebbing the rear window. Lyons saw the damage, and his jaw fell open.
Holy shit! What the hell was that?
His teammates exchanged a knowing glance and then looked toward the door leading to the upstairs, or what was left of it. The blast from the HE grenade had blown the door off its hinges and scarred the walls. The heat had ignited a small section of the wall where the cheap wallpaper had apparently been peeling and was ignited, but the fire wasn't anything that couldn't be handled by a half-decent fire extinguisher. Lyons took one last look at the damage done by the terrorists and then got to his feet.
Screw that! If I've got to risk buying the farm, I'd rather go against one round than 100.
He headed for the stairwell. His teammates joined him, and the threesome went through the shattered frame and ascended the stairs. Someone was shooting from the upper window, which meant that's where the attention would be focused. They reached the top of the stairs, and Lyons missed the top step.
Shit!
Whoa!
He tripped, Schwartz and Blun Canales falling on top of him, only their weight keeping him from sliding down the stairs on his stomach. His misstep saved their lives as the air above their head suddenly heated. A millisecond later, they were choking on dust and plaster, with wood slivers and pieces of plasterboard pelting their faces and hands. Schwartz raised his head and turned toward the wall, only to discover it wasn't there. It had been replaced by a gaping hole, one that would have been large enough to cleanly divide his upper and lower torsos if he hadn't tripped on Lyons.
Double shit!
The men were on their feet and moving into the landing within seconds. Blun Canales and Schwartz acquired the same target simultaneously. It was Paxton, and he'd tossed the Stormalite pistol aside and traded it for a standard-issue Beretta 92SB. He was still raising the weapon, but the Able Team commandos had him easily beat. There was no choice, so they did the necessary thing. The pair triggered their weapons less than a second apart. Schwartz's round punched through Paxton's chin. Lyons spotted Hauser in the corner. The man was visibly trembling, his hands up in front of his face. He kept looking from Lyons to Paxton, back and forth. Abruptly, his expression changed from fear and shock to hate and rage.
Don't do it!
But it seemed Hauser was no longer hearing him.
No!
With a speed that was surprising for a man of his years, Hauser launched himself out of the corner and charged Lyons. He raised his pistol and shot Hauser point blank in the skull. A suddenly wicked and eerie silence followed, and the three Able Team warriors realized that the shooting had ceased outside. They looked toward the front of the second-floor loft and noticed the casement-style window mounted to the front of the A-frame-like roof was wide open. Lyons rushed to the window and looked at the scene below. The carnage was unreal. Two huge holes had been torn in the side of the SWAT vehicle. Bodies were strewn everywhere, and it looked like a scene straight out of hell.
God help us. We better get down there.
Schwartz led them down the stairs, and when they reached the first floor, they noticed one lone officer seated just inside the door with his back against the wall. His face was a ghastly pale color, visible even in the poor lighting, and he had his MP5 cradled in his arms, more like a baby than a weapon. Schwartz stopped and looked down at him.
Get on your feet, man.
The SWAT officer looked up at the sound of the warrior's voice, but the look in his eyes was devoid of emotion. He'd just seen his friends and colleagues shot down in a heartbeat, but somehow they had missed this one man. That was a case of survivor's guilt that Schwartz could see the cop might never get over. He looked upon the scene with a sinking feeling, and the thing he noticed most was the amount of blood that puddled in the street.
Gadgets, we better go!
The Able Team warrior looked at his friend, nodded, and then crouched in front of the officer.
Look, son, you're gonna look back on this someday and it will be easier. I know it doesn't seem like it, but believe me when I say it will get easier. Until then, you've got to stay hard and take it one day at a time. But whatever you do, you can't give up. You hear me?
The officer stared blankly at him for a while, but then finally he nodded. And while Schwartz wasn't comfortable with leaving the guy here on his own, he took solace in the fact that he was getting through. At least it seemed like he was.
We got Paxton and Hauser, but we're still missing Davidia.
The trio started toward their car. They were about halfway down the block when an unmarked sedan with a blue and red flasher in the window screeched to a halt at the curb, and Grebe jumped out with three detectives.
What the hell is going on?
Lyons stepped forward and got nose to nose with the man.
Maybe you can tell us. We told you not to attempt apprehension, so you go and do exactly the opposite of what we asked you to.
Yeah, well, I don't take orders from you, pal.
Before the night's over, you won't have to take orders ever again.
Just what the hell is that supposed to mean?
Lyons jammed his finger into Grebe's chest.
Whatever you want it to mean, prick. Because of your dumb fuck pig-headedness, you've got at least 7 or 8 dead cops over there, and another who's probably going to have to collect bennies for the rest of his life, because he won't be able to pull a car over without thinking about how some bureaucrat with a hard-on got a bunch of his buddies wasted.
Bluncanalis reached for Lyons' shoulder.
Go easy, Iron Man.
You stay out of our faces, Grebe. I see you anywhere near this case, and I'll pop a cap in your ass just for the pleasure of expending the bullet.
Is that a threat, Irons?
1 Bravo 1 to dispatch. Would you 10-9 your last traffic?
Waters, find out what's going on.
The man reached inside the squad and yanked the microphone from its holder.
1 Bravo 1 to dispatch. Would you 10-9 your last traffic?
1 Bravo 1, copy. Suspicious vehicle was spotted leaving the quarantine area. Suspect is a white male, tall, average build, with dark hair. Seen leaving an underground garage in a blue sedan with rental tags. Make and model is unknown. But RP states that suspect was brandishing what looked like a pistol and carrying 2 large suitcases and should be considered armed and dangerous.
2 David 17 to dispatch. Be advised, I have the vehicle in sight. Suspect matches description. We are following, traveling southbound on Lakeshore Drive.
Davidia?
Lyons nodded, and then Able Team whirled and rushed for their vehicle.
God damn it, Lyons! You're not going anywhere! You hear me, you fucker? Lyons! Lyons!
Able Team completely ignored Grebe. Schwartz got behind the wheel and Lyons took shotgun, literally. The urban soldier jacked the pump on an AS-3 combat shotgun he'd stowed in the front seat and verified he was loaded with number 2 and double aught. Bluncanalis prepared an MP5A3 for himself and then checked the action on an FNC for gadgets.
How far is Lakeshore Drive?
Close. Make a left at the first corner and head straight.
Soon they were speeding south and trying to catch up with the squad car. There was a good chance that the cops would attempt to make a traffic stop on Davidia, and there was no way the terrorist leader was going to halt for them. After all, he'd spent a number of years as a Brooklyn cop, so he was well-trained in escape and evasion driving tactics and police procedure. The other troubling thing was the weapons he carried. The devastation he'd unleashed on those SWAT officers had been catastrophic.
We can't afford a repeat of what happened back there. It's do or die time, guys.
Agreed.
Schwartz shifted into fourth and gunned the accelerator as their first traffic light turned yellow. He wasn't planning to stop for anything if he didn't have to, red light or no, and if they got backed up in traffic, he'd get out and jog. He was in complete agreement with Lyons and Bluncanalis. They couldn't give Davidia, or whoever it was they were chasing, another opportunity to use those weapons, particularly not against the civilian population.
We got him! There!
Lyons pointed at the windshield. There was only a single squad car following the blue Chevy, and that was one too many.
You think you can take out that car in this traffic?
Piece of cake.
Schwartz eased into the right lane. The officer hadn't chosen to turn on his lights, probably for fear of losing the suspect until he could solicit additional units to help participate in the chase. Schwartz meant to ensure that no further cops got killed this day, and he was going to start by saving this guy's life without his even knowing it. Schwartz stayed in the right lane, keeping his vehicle just far enough back that his front grille remained parallel with the fender of the squad car. They continued down the busy drive. Schwartz waited patiently, driving with the speed of traffic until he spotted the concrete medians in a construction zone ahead.
Hang tight!
Schwartz turned into the cop's right fender. The cop tried to get out of the maneuver, but in true fashion, he spun out and his vehicle broadsided the median, spinning to a halt and facing oncoming traffic. As he regained control of the vehicle, Schwartz risked a glance in the cop's direction. He looked surprised, but he was unharmed. Schwartz took the position behind Davidia, and the RDL leader immediately increased speed. The speed slowly increased as traffic lessened, and then suddenly Davidia turned off the exit for Soldier Field.
What the hell is he doing? Going to a football game?
Of course. Think about it. They needed some place they could be secure for a very short time. They probably had to find a way they could house a cache of men and weapons. What better place than a football stadium in off-season?
How would they have avoided being seen by the groundskeeper?
You think someone working here during the summer wouldn't give them a key? Now you're being naive, Iron Man. They could have used anything from threats to blackmail to gain access.
Well, in a very short time, it won't matter. Schwartz negotiated the maze of cones and other barricades, some of which it looked as though Davidia had simply driven through, and arrived at the entrance to the stadium in short order. The vehicle was parked there but was empty, the driver's side door still standing wide open. Able Team went EVA as soon as Schwartz got their rental stopped. They approached the broad arches of the stadium with extreme caution. The danger of the weapons in Davidia's possession was his ability to trigger them by remote access and wireless networking protocols. That meant he could set up the weapons anywhere and use them against Able Team without putting himself in harm's way. The trio met their first opposition on the stairwell leading into the stadium proper. Two terrorists appeared at the landing and trained their mini-Uzis on them, unleashing a fusillade of 9mm hell. Schwartz and Blunt Canellis pressed themselves to the side of the railing, Lyons went flat, and then all three of them opened up simultaneously. The first terrorist was shocked to see his belly stitched open and his intestines spill out of his abdomen. He dropped to his knees and Blunt Canellis ended the play with a shot to the head. The second terrorist took rounds to the chest and a shotgun blast to the belly. The impact lifted him off his feet and dumped him on the landing. Lyons got to his feet and took up the center position between his teammates. They got to the top of the steps, then stepped into the stadium itself. Rounds began ricocheting off the metal poles and seats and tearing gouges in the steps.
Fan out!
The Stony Man soldiers did just that, intent on putting a quick end to the battle. Terrorists had taken up firing positions, some of them from considerable distance, and Able Team had mutually but silently agreed that the key to victory was taking the fight to the enemy. Blunt Canellis began picking off the terrorists on his left, catching two of them with good clean headshots. Lyons knew the shotgun would be ineffective against the terrorists at that range, so he left the matter to Paul and Gadgets. Besides, he had a matter of his own that needed attending. He abandoned the shotgun for his .357 Magnum Colt Python Elite revolver and went in search of Davidia. Wallace Davidia knew his cause was lost, and he felt personally responsible for the deaths of his colleagues and faithful followers. Davidia knew there was nothing he could do to bring back the dead, but he could at least ensure that those responsible suffered some casualties of their own. After abandoning the car, Davidia had taken the weapons and headed for the field. From the center of the stadium, he could position the guns to fire in every direction and he would be completely out of sight. He took one look at the activities in the stands and knew he could set up quickly at minimal risk. The men and women of the Resurrected Defense League had sworn to protect him, the cause, and each other with their lives, and in this they had achieved a major victory. The attacks from his forces continued, although they were rapidly running out of time and bodies. There wasn't much use Davidia could see in prolonging the suffering. The weapons were already loaded, so it was just a matter of waiting and watching. He primed the devices, then sprinted toward the nearest exit sign. Once beneath the relative safety of the stadium, Davidia turned on the PC tablet and watched the system carry through its boot up. As soon as he was at the command line interface, he began to type in the codes that Hauser had developed for it. One by one, Davidia watched with excitement as the weapons seemed to come alive. The servos and vertical horizontal balances moved by a simple electromechanical association. But the thrill was in the fact that they were responding under nothing more than simple networking signals. Davidia then punched in one of the pointers to the assault rifle and used a mouse ball and tracker built into the PC tablet to control the movement. He swung the muzzle in the direction of one of the men who was moving along the stands and shooting down his people like it was child's play. Davidia waited until the laser sight locked onto the target and the red lettering on the LCD turned to green. There was the sudden, unmistakable clicking of a hammer being drawn back, and Davidia felt the cold barrel of a pistol at the back of his head.
Put it down.
Davidia did as instructed.
Turn around.
Davidia turned to face the gunman. He was tall, blonde, muscular, and had eyes that were as blue and cold as gunmetal.
Who are you?
Does it matter?
Not really. I guess there was some point in my life where I suspected it would end for me this way. I just didn't think it would be this soon.
People like you usually don't, Davidia.
Oh, you know my name. How nice.
Yeah, but there's some people who know your name who are wishing they didn't. You've caused the death of more innocent people today than I care to count.
Behind him, Davidia could hear the sound of police sirens arriving. They ground on his nerves. The cops were too late. These men had finished what he had started.
You were once a cop.
How do you know that?
I see it in your eyes. I hear it in your voice. You don't demand service and loyalty and obedience from others. You command it. And there are only two kinds of people I know that can do that. Cops and soldiers.
And I suppose you view yourself as a soldier.
I maybe once, but no longer. Now, though, I welcome death. In fact, I beg for death. My existence no longer matters because someone will eventually show up to replace me. It's inevitable. For now, all I want is death.
Allow me.
Stony Man Farm, Virginia. On the West Bank, Israeli officials were still questioning civilians as to exactly what had happened. Damage assessments were being made of the buildings in the village of Araba, but investigators were dumbfounded by the sheer number of rounds they were finding lodged in the strangest places. They were also convinced that the Kahkahani Chai terrorists that the Palestinians swear were shot down by Americans couldn't have possibly been fired upon with small arms only, and so while there was not yet evidence to support the claim, they were ruling the destruction as being caused by an explosive compound of indeterminate origin. In Chicago, the funerals for the police officers were underway. The mayor fired Grebe, true to Lyon's prediction, the same evening he received a call from the head of the Justice Department on behalf of the president, wanting to know why agents from the Department of Homeland Security didn't receive full cooperation from the Chicago Police Department as promised. Oddly, the police were still baffled by what had actually caused such massive destruction to police equipment during a SWAT operation in the north part of the city, and equally disturbing damage to Soldier Field in the south. Not to mention the inordinate number of unidentified bodies that one police spokesman said looked like they'd gone through a cheese grater, or maybe the other way around. It was a tired and weary crew that gathered in the war room for their debriefing. David McCarter had even elected to be present, despite the fact he was under doctor's orders to get bed rest and plenty of it.
Yeah, right. That's about a 3-day prescription, max, and it's not refillable.
That's what you think.
Listen up, because I know you're all anxious to get out of here. The president asked me to pass on a very special thanks to each of you. I know this was a tough job, and you guys performed remarkably.
Just our usual high standards.
I'm glad to see you're in good spirits. It means you can get back to work.
Oh, really? Oh, maybe I shouldn't rush it, you know? This could turn out to be more serious than the doctors thought.
Doubtful. Only part that really got hurt was your ass.
In your case, that would have a deleterious effect on your thinking, mate.
Lyon sat back and folded his arms.
And they wonder why I drink.
Stony Man Maelstrom is a Graphic Audio production. Stony Man, The Executioner, and Mac Bolan are trademarks owned by Harlequin Enterprises Limited, used by others under license. Copyright 2005, Worldwide Library, all rights reserved. Production copyright 2006, The Cutting Corporation, all rights reserved. Performed by Terrence Aselford, Nanette Savard, Thomas Penny, Richard Rowan, Jeff Baker, David Coyne, Christopher Graybill, Kate Torrey, Christopher Walker, and Mort Shelby. Additional red shirts by The Dead Giveaways. Directed by Terrence Aselford. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Nathaniel Perry, Christian Parent, Chris Rowan, and Brian Rogers. The Stony Man theme was composed by Mark Ashby. Additional original music by Chris Rowan, Matt Webb, and Nathaniel Perry. Adapted for graphic audio by Mort Shelby. If you enjoyed Stony Man, be sure to look for Don Pendleton's Mac Bolan and writer Stacy's Doomsday Warrior, available at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloadable extras, forums, and podcasts. Keep listening for a preview of another Graphic Audio title.
The following preview is of a graphic audio production rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
Wen Chun sees an infomercial produced by Man Hyung's son and his cult of loonies. Chun knows he has found a true holy man. Remo knows he has found a true nut.
You know, this probably isn't the best time to tell you this, Rosebud, but I don't think we're who you think we are.
I was sent for you.
No, it couldn't be us. No one even knows we're here.
The Reverend Sun does.
Bullshit. I don't believe in any of this fortune-teller malarkey.
Do not listen to the heretic. If he blasphemes, it is merely the product of latent Catholicism. Perhaps good Seer Sun might perform an exorcism.
Remo's frustrations grow greater as Cure ships him to North Korea, where brainwashed American loonies are dancing to their leader's tune in a gambit to all-out war.
There is a problem. It is with the Americans.
Yeah, what about them?
Some of our agents in the field have been eliminated.
Eliminated?
The bodies were brutalized, Premier. The heads and fingers were removed and sent to us. Most likely for identification purposes.
So, what's the deal? Are the Americans pissed at us for some reason again?
I honestly do not know, Premier. However, I would recommend retribution for these killings. We cannot allow any government to imagine weakness on our part.
But Korea isn't the only split faction at war.
Forgive this one, great seer. He is a fool.
Better a fool than a stooge.
This is a holy moment. It is not open for disbelievers.
I don't know what kind of half-assed get-rich-quick scheme you've cooked up, but there's no way you're going without me.
Leave.
Make me.
Will Master Chun become a pawn of the mysterious Reverend Sun and his cult of loonies and leave Remo to defend the free world alone? Find out in Destroyer number 115, Miss Fortune Teller. Available now on Graphic Audio.
If you can't find that hot graphic audio title you're looking for, just head to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD or MP3 disc format. Or, the fastest and cheapest way, download that puppy and play it on any of the many devices that'll play Windows Media. And if you're on the road or just a total computer feeb, snatch up the phone and call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net.